Welcome all to the second COVID-19 podcast. Today we're joined by Elsa from DMA Safety Management, Janine from Marrick Communications, and Tom from Baines Wilson. I'm from Energis, and obviously you'll probably all know Adam from Adam Media. So I thought we could start by going around the room, starting with perhaps Elsa, and just go on, give us a little bit more information of what your company offers, obviously in the pre-COVID world, and then we'll go into a little bit more about how COVID's affected you. So shall we get going? Elsa?
Thanks, Rhianna. So I'm Elsa Mason, and the consultancy that we run is DMA Safety Management, an environmental health and safety consultancy based in West Cumbria, but working nationally and internationally, doing behavioural safety training, safety leadership, health and safety support, culture assessments, and we predominantly work across nuclear, construction, manufacturing and hospitality. We're home-based for the office, but most of our work is done out at client premises as part of what we deliver for them.
Brilliant. And Janine?
Okay, so I'm Janine Klaber. I'm the owner and managing director of Marrick Communications. We're a creative services organisation. What that means is that there are four things that we do. We are a kind of live events management and production company. We are a video production company. We do graphic design, and we also do communications and marketing services. About half of what we do is with the nuclear sector. I've got a personal background. I worked in the nuclear industry for about 15 years before I set Marrick up 13 years ago this year. And so a lot of the work that we do is with the sector. We also do quite a lot of work in the engineering kind of logistics sector as well. We've been members of Britain's Energy Coast Business Cluster for quite some time, more years than I can now remember. And we do a lot of work in West Cumbria as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, then Tom?
Thanks, Adam. Yeah, I'm an employment partner and part owner of Baines Wilson. So we're a business law firm based in Carlisle and Lancaster. I'm also a legal director for the cluster. So I've sort of got two hats in that regard, and been kind of managing or helping to manage both responses in terms of COVID. So I, as an employment lawyer, I predominantly advise employers, businesses. So the last few months has been fairly hectic in that regard.
Certainly, yeah. So I actually know all the businesses quite well. So I know how busy you all generally are. So when sort of March came around and things started to kind of progress in the UK and or sort of go backwards anyway and start to get tighter and tighter restrictions, what sort of, for each of you, what kind of were the steps leading up until that sort of 23rd of March lockdown date? And at what point did you have to start working from home? Should we start with Elsa again?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it started, I would say it started in January, where we started to see the news stuff come through. And obviously working in health and safety, you kind of are listening to what's going on in the world. And very quickly in January, I realised we've got something quite serious on our hands with the rate at which it was spreading. We started to kind of adapt what we were doing. By very beginning of March, we'd got clients who were cancelling travel. So sort of overnight, you'd sort of get emails in saying, right, okay, you're no longer travelling to Bristol. We're not having that. Everything that was training dropped out of the diary really quite quickly, understandably. And we went ourselves into lockdown because we had our eldest daughter who picked up symptoms. In fact, the day after the announcement that said, you know, you can't, you've got to self-isolate if you've got this persistent cough. And she developed it. So we went into isolation ourselves before everybody else went into lockdown and started working from home. But at the same time, trying to support those businesses that we are working with as they shifted their workforces to home, looking at it from that broader health and safety perspective for them. So quite a changing and manic time as this whole workload switched on its head, and which clients we were working for and what those clients wanted from us, all changed at the same time.
Right, wow. And Jane, did you find similar to that then? Were you sort of prepared in the sense that you saw this coming and you were having things, the plan was in place for when it all came about?
I think kind of looking back on it now, Adam, I think certainly I don't think we were perhaps maybe as prepared, you know, on reflection as perhaps what we could have been. And I think, you know, like most people, you know, we could see the news, we could see what was happening kind of, you know, in other parts of the world. And I think for a little while, whether it was a bit of naivety or kind of optimism, you know, kind of hoped that it wasn't going to turn into the situation that we were seeing elsewhere. And I think the first time that we really kind of saw it start to have an impact on our businesses, we were doing a launch event for Westinghouse, actually, on their Springfield site at the end of February. And the day before the event, Westinghouse made its own internal announcement around employees who had travelled to countries who were currently badly affected by COVID-19, you know, not being able to come into office locations. So we very quickly had to take a decision that if we were, you know, if the business was giving that advice to its employees, then it was only right that we had to have that same, you know, kind of operation in place for anybody who was visiting the site for the event. So I think we ended up with one or two people who weren't able to join us for that event because they travelled to Asia, you know, in the sort of 14, 16 days prior. So that was probably the first indication that I started to think this is really going to start to have a big impact, you know, on how we executed events. And I think for us, where it then started to have a, you know, a major impact is we were running the Nuclear Skills Awards annual awards dinner on the 12th of March. And there was a government announcement that day. And I think that was the day that we really started to see the impact that it was going to have. A number of organisations who were due to join us that evening had to pull out of the event because they put in place guidelines to suggest that people shouldn't be going to external events and shouldn't be travelling. So we started to see an impact directly on that event. But actually, I think the biggest impact we saw that day was a lot of the people that we work with when we're doing live events are freelance crew. So they might be audio technicians, lighting engineers, that kind of kind of profession. You know, they don't just work for us, they work for other people. And literally throughout the course of that day, they were getting cancellation after cancellation after cancellation. You know, and it was heartbreaking to see for them because they're obviously freelance, you know, self-employed, you know, people. And I think from then on, that's when we really saw the impact. You know, we went back into the office the day after that event, and literally then we started to see conversations happening with clients about events that we had in the calendar, you know, for the kind of the next sort of few months. And in the very, very rapid space of, you know, 2 or 3 days, everything was postponed. And then at that point, we also got ourselves ready to get the team working from home. We were kind of already geared up to kind of work remotely anyway, but I think there were a few things we had to do from an IT network perspective just to make it easier for people to work from home. So from kind of week of the 19th, around about the 19th of March, we basically moved everybody to working from home, and kind of that's where we've been ever since. So I don't think we were perhaps quite as prepared as Elsa was, but I think when we realised the impact, we kind of moved very rapidly to respond.
Yeah, it's a huge thing, I suppose, especially with the events industry, Janine, because you've got so much forward planning for so many events that a lot of the quite a lot of the work is up front, isn't it? So that's
it
difficult.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing, Adam, is that I think at the time, and again, whether this is naivety or optimism, you know, at the time, you know, when it all kicked off and the conversations we were having with clients and with venues and suppliers, I think everybody was very kind of optimistic that actually we were postponing for a very short term, but that, you know, towards the end of the year, we'd be able to move all of those events. And what we saw was suddenly a very congested events market where everything was rearranged for September, October, November. And I think at the time, back in March, you know, who on earth could have kind of contemplated the fact that we wouldn't have been doing that? And I think, you know, as we sit here today, I think the likelihood of, you know, face-to-face large gatherings of those kind is very, very unlikely. But at the time, you know, I think everybody was optimistic that, you know, how on earth could you foresee a situation where we wouldn't be doing that?
Certainly. And then Tom, with you, you mentioned in your intro that, you know, employment law, that's, it's sort of, in a way, it's quite a good time for that in some regards. How have you found that sort of the workload's changed over sort of from March till sort of the last few weeks?
So, I mean, I just going back to the original question as well, I sort of, it came on, started coming onto my radar kind of the end of January, start of February, and I've got saved on my desktop an email from a client where one of their employees, who I think is a bit of an amateur virologist, had set out this email about, do we need to be doing something? They're a sort of multi-site customer-facing business. do we need to be doing something now to prepare for this? Getting antiseptic wipes, getting hand wash, getting webcams because everybody's going to be doing everything by video, putting in place measures. And we had a bit of a blasé sort of backwards and forwards about it. He's a bit keen. You know, it might turn out that way, but he's a bit keen, isn't he? And pretty much everything in that email actually came to bear. So that was the first thing. As it moved on towards March time, I started to get lots and lots of emails, calls about redundancies and looking to make staff redundant. And we had to obviously advise on how you could make staff redundant, but also have a little bit of a protectionist attitude towards clients of, yeah, I think you should just hold on, because actually as this is progressing, and I said the government, they're going to have to do something. They will have to do something. They will put something in place to preserve jobs, which thankfully played out to be correct. So it moved from discussions about redundancies to lots of discussions about layoff, to lots of and lots and lots of discussions about furlough, to then discussions about redundancies again. So it's now come kind of full circle where we're now talking about fairly mass redundancies, but probably on a lesser scale than would have happened in March, and certainly less than if the furlough scheme hadn't been in place. But from our own point of view, I think we were slightly ahead of the curve. We put in kind of 50% shift almost a couple of weeks before lockdown. And then I think I've been working from home since about the 17th of March, and the guy just took all of my equipment home. But a lot of this, I think, is about luck. There's judgment involved, obviously, but sort of surviving through this, some of it's been about luck. And probably the biggest thing that's helped us, as a law firm, is we migrated to the cloud in November, and it was just sort of on the back of a conversation I had with another practice manager from another law firm that made us do it. And if we hadn't done that, that is probably the single biggest thing that's helped us pretty much remain stable.
Yeah, definitely. I think beyond this, it's going to be a huge thing on everyone's agenda. It's going to be make sure that anyone can work from anywhere, anytime, if they have to. So definitely, it's interesting to hear about the furlough as well, that obviously you want to ensure that people don't instantly start just getting rid of the workforce, when actually there are going to be schemes that come into place. So that's, I suppose, the lesson is sort of, let things develop a bit first without taking any sort of immediate decisions. So, yeah. Good. And how have you all found the working from home then? Have you got any sort of feelings about working from home? Is it going to continue going forward? I mean, Elsa, I know you already do sort of work from a home office, the same as I do, but did you find that there's been benefits or challenges with that?
There's been some great benefits, and there's some significant challenges too. And we're set up ordinarily here with there's three desks, because there's a lady that comes in and works for us as well, who went off on maternity at the beginning of March. And we would normally work in there, but we'd only be in a couple of days a week, and we'd be out the rest of the time. And then any other calls we've got, we'd take out of the office to take them. But what we found is, because we've switched to predominantly Teams meetings, Zoom meetings, virtual meetings, that you can't do that, sat next to each other all the time. So we've kind of had to sort of split that out and kind of make another desk and in another room, and then find spaces for the children so that they've got somewhere productive to work for their homeschooling. I see it working for us in the future. I mean, we recognised as we went into lockdown, there was some internet work we were going to be doing around Northern Europe. We'd been planning the various sort of flight routes to get between the different places for this client. And obviously that all went very, very quiet. But we kind of recognised that it's going to be a long time before we can get back out to service those kind of businesses. So what we've done is we've developed the room that I'm in now as a VC room, so that we can actually deliver training from here, and we can run meetings. Once the restrictions are more lifted here, we'll be able to have up to six people in a meeting here and then talking to whoever's on the screen. And that's enabled us to get that particular piece of work up and running. So we've now delivered the first stage of the cultural assessment for that business. So absolutely delighted that we've been able to do that. We've reduced the travel costs, we've reduced the environmental impacts, that's reduced the cost to the client, and we've still been able to deliver a really good piece of work for them. So quite excited about the prospect moving forward, that there will be less travel for us. We can spend more time actually here in West Cumbria, which we both love being in, and the kids love growing up in, and we're just so very blessed to be here. And it, the potential for us not going back to this diary management where can you get home on that night because I can't type conversations that that seem to go on. And we're also working with a number of businesses who are looking quite seriously at their strategy moving forward and how they can use this opportunity to build on the kind of net carbon neutral possibly targets that we've all got in business. And it's given people an opportunity to try new ways of working. So some fantastic opportunities, some challenges to go with it. And I think balancing mental health and how everybody is, looking after each other and the people that you're seeing in clients, has also been really key. And being able to say to people, is it time you had a break? It's watching out for those tells. That's also our next sort of stage of development and looking after each other as community.
Brilliant. And so sort of like, thanks Elsa for sort of sharing the here and now. The same question really for Janine and Tom. It's sort of, yeah, where are we at today? You know, we're in July. Things are starting to get back open. Sort of, you know, as we've heard, the restaurants and the pubs are starting to reopen and the industry's getting going again. You know, build. That's the slogan. How are things looking now in your businesses?
Do you want me to kick off? I think for us, I think, you know, right at the start when this all really started to kick off in middle of March, you know, for us, it was pretty much complete shutdown, not just on the events industry side of things, but on everything else that we did. You know, we were doing some bits and pieces of work for clients around kind of their COVID-19 response. But effectively what we were seeing is that most clients, quite rightly, you know, their head was focused on dealing with their own crisis, getting employees to work from home, you know, all of the issues around kind of, COVID-19 and their kind of management of that. So they didn't really have the headspace, understandably, for doing some of the kind of things that we would normally be working with them on. So, you know, we had quite a prolonged quiet period. And I think at first, you know, looking back on it, you know, I think I was quite shell-shocked at the time. You know, I'd always had a really, really busy job. I'd spent, you know, lots of time, you know, like Elsa, traveling, you know, not always being at home, you know, all those kind of things that I loved and, you know, enjoyed about my job. And then suddenly it's kind of like, oh, what do I do now? You know, and having it kind of, it almost felt a little bit like I'd lost my purpose for a little while, which is a very odd thing to say. But it actually gave me a bit of impetus to kind of really sit and think, well, actually, what do we do about this? You know, we can't kind of just sit and do nothing. That's, firstly, it's not in my nature. And secondly, it's not good for the business and the future of the business. And I think for us, the furlough scheme was a huge relief. So Dave and I that run the business at Marrick, you know, I think for us, that Friday announcement, you know, we kind of, you know, all slept easy that weekend, knowing that, you know, the most important thing to us was our people, and we could help protect our people at least for however long that, you know, scheme lasts. And it gave us that time to really look at what we were going to do with the business and how we were going to respond to that. So that was a huge kind of, you know, point in time for us that made a massive difference to I think where we were at the time, but also I think to where we are now. So it gave us that breathing space to look at, you know, what can we do here? And I think certainly the biggest impact for us quite naturally was the event side of the business. And I think we were looking at a very prolonged period of not being able to do live physical events, and therefore what could we do? So we spent a lot of time talking to clients, really trying to understand where perhaps we could start to add value, what sort of things they would be looking to do, you know, recognizing that, you know, whilst physical events weren't possible, kind of the need to communicate and engage with people actually probably was more important than ever before. So we spent a lot of time looking at how we could, you know, transform our events business into a virtual events offering, you know, and where that added value would come from a production company, you know, versus the kind of things that, you know, clients quite naturally can do themselves. So for example, like we're here meeting virtually, you know, over Zoom, you know, clients, you know, can manage that kind of things themselves. but there's clearly a place where a production company and a professional events management organisation can add some value. So we transformed our offering. We spent a lot of time looking at all the different platforms that are available. You know, I think we've got a really great offering now, and we're talking to a lot of people about what we can do. We've got the studio that we've created down in Manchester, where there's an opportunity for events that have that increased wow factor. It's a fully equipped, almost like a TV studio. It's got a 16 meter wide curved LED screen, you know, studio grade lighting, sound, cameras, you know, super fast internet, you know, and it took us a while to kind of get to that point of having that offering. But I think that, you know, the breathing space we had has actually been really great for us, because I think although we were used to doing virtual events, and, you know, most people who do event production are used to having that kind of live stream aspect to an event, it was always a bolt-on and an add-on. Whereas I think what we're seeing now is obviously a complete shift to virtual. And I think what we'll see in the future is a shift to much more virtual meetings or hybrid meetings, where we've got a mixture of people meeting physically and those who are meeting virtually. So we had to basically completely transform that side of the business. I think in terms of the other services we offer, I think certainly we've seen over the last 3 or 4 weeks a huge shift. You know, I think clients have kind of not necessarily come out of the crisis mode, but I think they now have that headspace to be looking at more normal activities. So we've certainly seen an increase in the other things that we would normally be working with clients on as well.
Brilliant. Yes, Janine, we actually spoke last week about this, and it's amazing that the event that you've ran recently for quite a large client, they actually said that going forward they might actually change it and have it in that format all the time, because people weren't having to travel on motorways and fly in from around the world. Everyone was just joining in that fashion. So it's sort of, coronavirus has brought on lasting changes for like the whole sort of scope of events, really. But you know, I'm sure that there'll still be a place for the in-person things, is that can never be replaced. But I think it's that hybrid going forward that'll be really strong, actually. Tom, here and now for you, how's it looking at Baines Wilson today?
So we, as I say, we've been very lucky. We at the start of it, we didn't really know how this was going to affect us and clients. You don't know whether everyone's going to go into shutdown and therefore work's going to dry up. We're not in that kind of space. So I think we knew that things would carry on, you know, advice and people still needing advice about things would carry on. But it's probably been better than we forecast, that's for sure. The working from home, everybody's been working from home, and yeah, everyone's probably been through the same thing. First of all, it was a bit of a novelty, and actually it was quite nice, and then it became a bit boring and not quite as nice, and then everything was sort of full circle, and now it sort of feels normal and actually more efficient. So yeah, I feel like I am far more efficient working from home than when I'm in the office. So I think there will be lasting changes. I think businesses like ours, we were relatively flexible already, but I think people will move more towards agile working and have more flexibility for people to start within reason when they want, as long as client needs a service. I think that's going to be the fundamental point. Physically, the offices have been obviously shut since the 23rd of March. We're now looking at how to safely reopen them against the backdrop of, on the whole, people can work from home. But we're putting in place kind of measures to distance desks and have partitions, and we've got stickers everywhere saying stay apart from each other. We've got more hand sanitizer dispensers than I think I normally see in the hospitals. So, you know, we're taking practical measures to make the offices probably feel as safe as they can, as much as being safe. I think there's an element of wanting them actually to feel safe, so that people, if they are ready to come back and want to come back, that they feel like they're not at risk by being here. So that's that. And client wise, I had my first visit to a client yesterday. Since March, down in Lancaster. So I was kind of thought that would all just be take all that in my stride, and then I had the anxiety of actually putting on real trousers for the first time and whether they would actually fit, and you know, what would I do if they didn't, and all of those things. But thankfully they did, and yeah, it was sort of, it feels like things are getting back to normal. Everything just feels like it's getting back to normal. And I think with some practical changes and modifications and doing more things virtually, and seminars we'll probably do virtually, at least initially as well. It feels like things are getting back.
Well, what we're noticing is on these calls is a lot of companies are actually having quite positive stories out of COVID-19. But I know a lot of you guys, furlough schemes have been quite important for the success or continuity of your businesses. But in terms of your staff well-being, how are you putting any other measures in place to, if they have been furloughed, are you still keeping in contact with them? Obviously, home working is quite isolating. Are you putting any measures in place to look after them, make contact with them? What's happening staff-wise with your companies? Who wants to start?
Want me to kick off? I think for us, you know, the team at Marek have always been very much like family. You know, it's one of the things that, you know, I think people who work within, you know, our team, you know, really like. We're really good friends. We're all very, very close. So, you know, for us, and for, let's say, for Dave and I who run the business, you know, it was heartbreaking to have to furlough the team. You know, it was kind of the last thing we wanted to do, but we knew we had to do it to protect them and to protect the business. So that kind of element of keeping in touch has been really, really important, you know, both from a working perspective, but also on a friendship basis as well. So, you know, we have regular, you know, kind of get togethers, you know, virtually using Teams. You know, we have phone calls with the team. We've had, you know, virtual quiz nights with, you know, a couple of drinks. And I think that, you know, it's just maintaining that contact to say, you know, we have a really, you know, it's a great environment when we're in the office, and that, you know, I miss that hugely. You know, going back to the point about working from home, I'm set up to work at home, it's absolutely fine, I don't have any issues with it, but that kind of camaraderie and the buzz of working in that kind of environment, you know, I miss hugely, and I know the team miss it, and they want nothing more than to kind of come back to work. But at the moment, obviously, we don't have that kind of workload there to enable them to do that. So we very much have to fill that gap with more social contact instead. And, you know, I'm sure there's always, you know, more of that we can do. But, you know, just really making sure people are okay and, you know, and caring for them, you know, is really, really important to us.
Brilliant. Elsa, you're obviously just a very small team, so it's slightly different. But have you had to sort of put in any kind of more sort of change between social time and sort of work time? Have you had to sort of differentiate between those two periods?
I think the challenge for us has come in supporting our clients as they move towards that, because obviously we're heavily involved in helping them to develop their home working strategies, their mental health, their wellbeing programs. So we're working with businesses to make sure that they're doing things like this, that they're getting some kind of newsletters out, they're doing quiz nights, they're doing that in-house interaction, but also starting to work with those businesses where they've got people coming back off furlough, and how we reintegrate those people into a team where some people have been furloughed and some people haven't. Everyone's had very different experiences as we move through this, and for some people furlough will have been a delight, and for some people furlough will have been a disaster. And we've got to get those people back into our teams and integrated back into the culture of our businesses. In some instances, that in a remote working environment as well. And, you know, those are the calls that we're starting to have now with businesses to see how they're going to do that, what kind of leadership, what kind of team building they're going to do, what kind of training they're going to do to get people reintegrated and help people to get back into the corporate culture that each business has.
Brilliant. And then Tom, last one, sort of, you're obviously a much bigger company than both Elsa's and Janine's, but have you had any different sort of ways to keep contact with the workforce?
So yeah, so we've got about 40 of us in total. And I don't mind saying and sharing that initially, so at the start of this, when I was getting probably 80 phone calls a day from clients about the furlough scheme, and also as a kind of business owner and recently having bought into the business and sort of wanting to be the kind of leader that I wanted to be, it was so difficult. It's so difficult to do the work also at the same time as thinking about and need to be communicating with people as well, you know, internally. So what we did initially, I mean, the simple things, we set up a kind of staff WhatsApp group generally, and I think, like probably most initially, on the first day, there was about 6 million messages into that. And you know, gradually over time, we've tailed off to getting maybe 3 messages a week into it or something like that. But you know, just initial steps to just make sure that people can keep in contact with each other. We've probably stepped up personally as partners, kind of just exchanging text and WhatsApp with members of our immediate teams in our, you know, departmentally, just to make sure that people were okay. Elsa, what you said about furlough is absolutely right. And we haven't had to furlough everybody. We've taken steps to use it where necessary, if there's been maybe slight drop-offs in work in certain areas, or with support staff where some fee earners might be doing more of their own, you know, more stuff themselves. And some, you know, in some cases it's sort of seen as a bit of a negative thing, and in some cases it's seen as a great, I can not worry about work, the weather's nice, I can be out in the garden, I can, you know, I can just switch off. And it's identifying that. It was identifying the difference in people's views and actually treating people as individuals. So there isn't a one size fits all. And I think every business, us included, there are certain things that we, with hindsight, might have done a bit differently, might have communicated certain things differently. But fundamentally, I think we've done okay with it. But it's been about just keeping in touch with people and making sure that every now and again, not daily, you know, otherwise people get stressed out by the daily phone call about nothing much, but just every now and again, touch points to make sure you're checking in.
Fantastic. So you mentioned there, Tom, about being out in the sun. Sort of last question to finish on here, actually. We'll have name one thing, each of you, that you've done in lockdown that is a bit different to normal, that's been a bit sort of surprising, perhaps, and perhaps also one thing that you're most looking forward to doing once things do resume back to normal. So we'll start with you, Tom, while we're there.
Okay. So one thing I've done, quite early on, I knew that she was going to become a pescatarian. So, and you know, as a sort of, I do all the cooking, almost all the cooking. So I've had to adjust, adapt, and figure out how to actually cook for two people with different sort of dietary requirements. One who doesn't really mind eating meat and quite likes eating meat, and one who doesn't. And actually, what's probably happened is I've become a bit of a pescatarian as well, because I couldn't be bothered to keep figuring out how to cook two separate variations of the same thing. So my kind of cooking and dietary habits have changed a little bit, and I've morphed towards being a pescatarian. Do you want me to do the other question as well?
Yeah, most looking forward, perhaps, it's going out to eat some meat, is it?
Well, look, hey, I am a bit of a foodie. So yeah, the thing I'm most looking forward to is we've booked in the restaurant in our village, Lounge on the Green, has now reopened. So we're booked in for Saturday night. We're going to go and have a taste of menu there. So we're kind of, that's one of the things we enjoy doing probably more than anything, is going to collect Michelin stars from around the world, various restaurants. And this one doesn't have one, but it actually feels like the right thing to do, to go to our most local restaurant, spend our money locally, and just have a night out, eating some decent food, and staggering home.
Brilliant. Janine, have you got anything?
I think for me, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's hugely interesting, but I think it was an interesting kind of realization that I actually worked far too much. And I think what this has given me is an opportunity to kind of open my eyes and be a bit more in the moment and in the present, that actually, you know, I have had a much better balance in my life the last few months. You know, there've been some very worrying times from a business point of view, but actually I've had a much better balance in my life. So I think I'm looking forward to continuing that. You know, it's kind of a goal that I've set myself to try and do that. I'm not sure that I won't always, you know, achieve that. But I think certainly, you know, that being in the moment, I think I've been quite surprised, actually, the village that I live in, I've lived in, you know, all my life. And actually that opportunity to stop and be in the moment and really just look around at what is around you. kind of had my eyes open to a few things and kind of really enjoyed doing that. So I'm looking forward to continuing a lot of that.
Brilliant. Good stuff. And Elsa?
I think there's been quite a number of surprises here. I think the laughter that we've had, my two daughters have set a thing at lunchtime that when we meet up for lunch, that one of them chooses an animal of the day, and then we all have to do a mimic of that animal. Now, who would have thought that a 12 or 14-year-old could have such fun just mimicking caterpillars, ostriches, whatever? So, and also the challenge of getting, we've got our church up and running on Zoom church, we've been instrumental in leading some of those services. So again, another awesome thing to be able to do and stuff. I'd have said at the start of this, whoa, I'm going nowhere near that. but I think looking forward, we've been really fortunate here to get out most days and get out for a walk. And we're in between the seas and the sea and the fells here. But I'm aching to get out onto those bigger peaks again. That's the next step.
Great. You've all got loads to look forward to in the next few months, really. So that's everything from us. Thank you for taking the time to join us. I hope you've actually enjoyed it as much as we have as well. So we'll end the recording now.
Yeah, wish you all the best. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.